From the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin, welcome to the Surgery Set. I'm Jonathan Kohler, an assistant professor in pediatric surgery here in Madison. I'm new here, and with this podcast, I'm exploring the ideas, inventions, and innovations of our department and our university, plus meeting a lot of really interesting people. I'm excited for you to join me. Our guest today is Dr. Ala Abd Al-Sayed. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Wisconsin, and he's the medical director of UW Pain Services and the Chronic Pain Management Program. Dr. Al, as he likes to be called, is an expert in helping patients manage pain. He also conducts clinical research in the use of opioids, genetic variations leading to different individual response to opioids, and the use of neuromodulation and peripheral nerve stimulators for the management of neuropathic pain. Dr. Al, welcome to the Surgery Set.
Thank you.
You gave a great grand rounds this morning as a representative from the Chronic Pain Service to us at the Department of Surgery, and people can go online, obviously, and see that and get CME credit for it, but today we're just going to talk about some of the things that you talked about that I thought were really fascinating, focus sort of around the area of chronic pain after surgery. I guess sort of the first point you made was that doesn't even have a definition yet.
That's correct. There is nothing much published really on post-surgical chronic pain and how it is managed, but there are like the article we published about the transition clinic from Canada, and there are a couple of few models started to do transition clinics, but the definition exactly of what is a chronic pain, how long after surgery, is just quoted to be 2 months from the article I had, but really there is no clear definition.
Right. So you sort of talk about, you know, most patients have surgery, feel better, go on their way. Some percentage meet some criteria for chronic pain, meaning pain that doesn't go away. And you talk a little bit, and maybe you can sort of review the risk factors for what it is that may allow us to predict which patients are going to have chronic pain after an operation.
So there are several risk factors that we can recognize that will help us to identify those patients. And they start from the preoperative period. So preoperatively, if we get a patient who's already in chronic pain or taking high-dose pain medications. Also, they found females are more actually to be predisposed to this, which actually, across the whole spectrum of chronic pain, females tend to have lower thresholds for pain and development of chronic pain. The presence of psychiatric problems. And then we move to the operative part. It depends on how extensive the surgery. Some extensive surgeries are associated with increase in post-operative pain. And then the post-surgical part, again, psychological problems and being not prepared to deal with the post-operative phase and pain. Development of severe post-operative pain that will not managed can also lead to the development of chronic pain. So kind of we have risk factors that we know and can help us to identify the patients who might develop chronic pain after surgery.
And one of the key points that you got to in that discussion was the value then of if you have patients that you think are at high risk for developing post-operative chronic pain, whether that be because they have preoperative chronic pain or because they sort of meet these criteria that are increasingly being defined. Like, you talk a lot about this transitional care program. I thought that was really interesting, that this notion of helping people through, it's not acute pain. It's not quite chronic lower back pain that is expected to last for a lifetime, but it's somewhere in the middle.
Correct. And this is a very good model to take care of the post-surgical patients because they don't fit into the acute-like post-surgical pain and they are not chronic pain patients. They need something in between. That's why some places started to develop those transitional clinics to take the patient from the acute phase into either the chronic phase or hopefully into recovery completely and being not a chronic pain patient. So that's kind of the models that fill the gap in between both and help to provide better patient care and a more controlled environment for taking care of those patients.
And you're working on developing one of these transitional pain clinics here at the university.
Correct. So we built a very great chronic pain program here, and we found there is need for that service. And we are in the phase now discussing with the higher hospital administration about the need for this clinic. And I'm glad today, actually, that maybe 90% of the surgeons indicated the benefit they will have with having such a clinic. And I hope we'll move forward with developing that clinic to fill that gap and take care of those patients.
And it would, I mean, I think we all know patients, you know, that we've had as surgeons who desperately needed something, right? And
correct.
Who were sent home with opioids. And you made the point that many patients who are sent home with opioids don't fill their prescriptions or don't use all the opioid medication. And then there's that set that come back looking for refills over and over and over, and helping find a place, a home for those patients that isn't surgeons who I think get past their comfort level and sort of multiple renewals of opioid prescriptions pretty quickly, and it's not quite like the chronic pain process. Seems to make a huge amount of sense. And you talked about how the approaches would be a mixture of techniques, right?
Correct. So as you mentioned, it's a very challenging thing. We know patients when they have surgery, a lot of them will have pain. It's about how to manage that pain. And the surgeon have to take care of this post-operative pain, so they do give their patients pain medication. But then nobody knows what's really going on, because some patients really will either continue to be in pain, they need more or need something else. Some patients don't need those pills at all, so those pills will be sitting somewhere within reach of others, or will be actually wasted, which is another sort of loss that we don't want to have in our system. So that's why having this transition clinic will make it easy on the surgeon to refer the patient to a transition clinic.
And in some cases, refer them even preoperatively. Right?
Correct. So actually, the plan for pain, if we do recommend that, that's one of the things we can control, because as we discussed earlier, there are risk factors. So maybe those risk factors can have us identify those patients and target them to be taken care of from before actually surgery, which will reduce the development of postoperative surgery in general for those patients. And then the other maybe percent of patients that may not have the clear risk factors, but they will continue to have chronic pain, will be at least a small proportion of patients that can be taken care of as well in the transition clinic.
You know, as you give this talk, I kept thinking about not only my patients and the way that we manage pain as surgeons, but, you know, also the headlines you see in the newspaper or online every day now about the opioid epidemic. And what do you think pain management specialists can do to help surgeons, and just, you know, what is the future of decreasing opioid abuse?
So to decrease opioids abuse, we have just to develop alternatives. We have to think what else we can do to take care of pain. There are patients who have the risk for addiction, but some actually develop addiction or develop misuse or develop tolerance, are kind of broad spectrum of definitions here about what can happen when a patient uses opioids. And we have to think of alternatives. So we have to take care of the pain. That's the fact that remains. And that's why I presented earlier this study I performed on my patients. Those patients, all of them actually, or I'd say most of them were on opioids before they come to me. Most of them tried other things. While maybe big majority of them, when we did this simple nerve block, they actually had good improvement in their pain and they were happy and they didn't require more care. So finding the alternative is the key. So we have to work together on finding alternative medications, alternative procedures, and more available specialized care for those patients. I think that, I will not say will eliminate 100% of the problem, but it definitely will eliminate a big portion of the problem.
In your talk, you can see there's a complex figure of all the things that cause pain and when it causes pain. And there are a lot of arrows leading back to psychosocial issues, a lot of arrows leading back to factors in a patient that are not going to be served by attaching something to an opioid receptor. So can you tell us a little bit more about sort of the integrative approach, or sort of the stepwise approach that you recommend for taking for patients who are sort of likely to develop chronic pain or having pain problems?
This is a very good point. When I meant by alternative therapy, is not I don't want to give the attention to only medications and procedures. But alternative options will include pain psychology, will include physical therapy, will include acupuncture, yoga, will include medications, will include procedures. There is a huge spectrum of a lot of things that can be done to help the patient. And this will really depend on how do we identify the patient and the problem. So some patients just are anxious or depressed or can't deal with the post-operative pain. Those patients will need more of a psychiatric care. And I can't tell you how many times pain psychology was the answer for patients' pain. It was never medications or anything else. We send them to pain psychology, 2 weeks, they tell you, I'm feeling good.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So the answer is not always in the pill or in the needle.
Yeah.
So we have to think out of the pill and the needle. So that's why identifying those patients and route them in the right place is very important, or doing multiple things, giving maybe some alternative medications, sending them to physical therapy, sending them to pain psychology, doing 3-4 things to the patient that are in need can just improve their pain. And I want to refer that when we talk about opioids, the issue is not really opioids only, and of course there's a lots of problem it causes, but the problem is the patient who might develop the habit because of us or because of the prescription, or the patient who may not have their pain control needs met because they get labeled as they use opioids or so. So the spectrum is beyond just the word opioids.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I remember my early days as a medical student thinking, you know, if pain, then opioids, right? And as a, you know, as an intern, like that was often the solution. Someone complained of pain, you like gave them more oxycodone until they were no longer complaining about pain. and then you sent them home with 200 tablets of oxycodone. And I think, you know, as I've gone on, I've learned, and maybe it's just because we're globally more recognizing the fact that pain is much more complicated, right? It's correct. More than just opioid receptors. It's very multifactorial, right?
Correct. And I think we have the greatest health system worldwide, and we take care of our patients, I think, in the best shape ever. That's why we want to make them satisfied. We try to make their whole surgical procedure and experience painless, which is a great goal, and I think we're very successful at it. And I want to also get the attention that we're not saying no opioids. Opioids are needed, but they are needed in the right doses for the right patients, for the right period of time, for the right indication. Mm-hmm. And with other things to do to help the pain, or sometimes just using the alternatives. And when I reference the WHO pyramid, is always what we really use for treating pain. The pyramid starts with completely non-pharmacological things. So I think we should, as we do everything, and as a surgeon, you always start with the mild to severe, or you start from the minimally invasive to the more invasive. Same like in pain management, we need to start with the more easy options, I would say, or harmless options, and go up the ladder. Some patients will need to be on step 4 and 5 and have more things done, but at least shouldn't be everybody.
Right. What would you recommend to surgeons in terms of, I mean, obviously you don't want to and don't have the capacity to prescribe postoperative pain medicine for every patient who has an operation, and there's no need for that. I think most patients do great. What's the right time to send a patient to be evaluated by a pain specialist?
So actually, the right time always to send a patient to a pain specialist if we think their pain is not really well controlled by what we're giving them. The opioid use is 50 milligram of morphine equivalent, which is actually a lot lower than before. Before it was defined as 200.
Oh, wow.
Like a few years ago.
Yeah.
But now it's 50 milligrams. So I think when...
That's per day or...
Per day.
Per day, yeah.
So when the surgeon or a provider feels it's getting above this, patients requiring more, and we don't see improvement, and we see that things just getting, I would say, more need for other options, I think that's the right time to refer to the pain clinic. And I agree with you, the problem happened that we don't have capacity to see post-surgical patients because we have a lot of chronic pain patients. And that's why I thought of the idea of the transition clinic, looking at other great models like us, and found that this is going to be a great option for everybody, for the chronic pain clinic, for the surgeons, for the patient, because that's going to fill the gap. So the surgeon will not be obligated anymore to give too many pills for the next month, but maybe give less pills, or maybe if you think no pills, but knowing that there's a place you will go to, and if you have pain. Actually, I think this is very assuring to the patients. A lot of the patients tell me, I wanted to get pain medications leaving the hospital, because what if I develop pain? What I'm going to do.
Sure. So yeah, right.
So sometimes
even if they're not in a huge amount
correct.
Of pain
so actually,
before they go.
Because
yeah.
I do implants and surgery myself for pain, and the patient
yeah.
Tell me, you know, some of them just want the pain medication. Tell me, what if I develop pain? What I'm going to do? I'm having a surgery. I don't have somebody with me 24/7, and I can't go to the ER. What I'm going to do?
Yeah.
So that's, but actually a lot of patients, when they find that, no, there is a way to get pain medication if you need after surgery, you're probably not asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it will be very helpful service.
Yeah.
It will not eliminate the problem 100%, but definitely will eliminate a big part of it.
And the plan would be that surgeons would refer to you preoperatively, even if they thought those patients
correct.
Were at a high risk. And then postoperatively, if sort of the usual progression of a small amount of narcotic pain medicine that then should taper off, if that doesn't work, then they would be sent over to transition.
Correct. I think yeah. we should develop like very clear algorithm about which patients will need CM pre-op
mm-hmm.
to get a plan, and maybe regional anesthesia involved in acute pain to make sure the requirement will not be high at the end of surgery, and or post-operative if thing happened post-operative. And then will the post-operative immediate pain will be lifted to the evaluation of the surgeon. Because you might do a simple surgery that you think you don't need too many pills, so give just, I'll say, a few pills.
Yeah.
And then the patient can get more if they need to.
Right.
So, and some will need more, some will not need more. But I think that will minimize the problem
yeah.
to a big part.
Fantastic. Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be an incredible resource for a problem that I think we're only just starting to study and just get our heads around. So it's...
Correct. I hope really we will be able to establish such a clinic to serve our system and help us to be one of the leading hospitals in the nation.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. People, of course, can go and see your talk online at surgery.wisc.edu and get an hour's worth of CME credit for learning all about this really interesting
thanks
and important
so much
issue.
For having
so thank
me
you.
Today. Thanks so much. Okay.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Join us next time when we'll hear from Dr. Michelle Chucci.
I started out doing work in humans with Parkinson's disease and looking at the effects of neurosurgical intervention called deep brain stimulation surgery and how that affects communication.
She's an associate professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders, and she talks about her research on Parkinson's disease and elaborates on some of the discoveries that she and her team have made thus far. The Surgery Set is a production of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wasileski and myself. It was audio engineered by Chris Hansen and edited by Alex Worley. Our theme song is On Wisconsin, arranged and produced by Jamie Schmidt. I encourage you to visit us at surgery.wisc.edu, where you can find links to Grand Rounds, free CME credits, and more. You can also check out the UW School of Medicine and Public Health Video Library for a wide range of medical education resources at videos.med.wisc.edu. In addition, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And of course, you can follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page and also find us on Twitter at Wisc Surgery, as well as me at J.E. Kohler. Please feel free to let us know how we're doing, and especially let us know if there are topics you'd like us to cover. Thanks, and we hope you check back soon.